It's your number 11202, reel 3.
Mr. J.C. Rogers, reel 3. Getting towards the end of your 12 weeks training, Mr. Rogers, have you any particular recollections of officers and NCOs?
The one that was going to put us under a charge, we went out on a scheme one night, Lieutenant Cooper, and it was during the night, and I was out doing probably a guard or something, and he come and he crept up towards me and tried to take off my rifle, and he grabbed my rifle, and I just got hold of my rifle as I'd been trained by one of his instructions probably, and I just twisted the rifle and away he went down under the bottom, and he got up and he said, "Good show, Rogers, good show." So we did get a little bit of our own back at him before we left the training.
Was there any, in those initial days, was there any signs of bullying in the unit?
No, there was nothing like that at all, no. We never.
No such things as initiation ceremonies?
No. Just ordinary banter, you know, they just come in and just say, "Where's Rogers?" and have a bit spar and that kind of thing, but there was no ill treatment of soldiers or anybody being extra hard on anybody, no.
In your weapon training, did you have any experience of a variety of weapons?
What the infantrymen needed, the rifle and the Bren machine gun and mortars, those that were on picked out for to go on to the mortar platoon. And I think that was all the ones we fired at the Whitburn Range were the Bren gun and the rifle training. Yeah.
Did you have
They were specialists. The ones that went on mortar and other things, they were specialists. Right?
Did you have any training in gas precautions?
Well, gas mask and training in use of the gas mask. As a matter of fact, with being in a special constable, I'd learnt something about the gases, and the mustard gas, there was going to be a fortnight to leave given to anyone that went to Guinea Pig and got tested with the mustard gas. So although my father said when I went in the army, volunteer for nothing, the 2 weeks leave was a bit of a thing for me, and I did volunteer for to go and be tested because I knew that it wasn't going to do me any harm. My skin was going to blister, but that was going to be the worst part about it, and it never come off. We were never sent there, so I was there. But we did get training in gas masks and doing running and different things in the gas mask. I think we were put into some place at one time, I think, and given a test where the gas was on, with our gas masks on, of course. Yeah. But that's all I can remember about that.
Your field training while you were at New Brunswick, what kind of exercises did you do in your field training?
Exercises.
Did you just literally go in the fields and shoot, or were you actually doing any kind of movement exercises? Or?
Oh, well, it was when we went out, it was a case of teaching us how to put the barbed wire fencing round, how to use the windlass stick and set up the barbed wire thing, and two methods of going over other people's barbed wire. That was I actually had to do that, some gloves on, and the first one, and I went onto the wire, the gloves were to protect your face, and I lay down onto the, pressed this barbed wire down, and the company had to come through and just put one foot on your back and jump, and one went to the right and one went to the left, and they went through the gap that I'd made in the wire. We used to do that kind of thing.
So your training ended after 12 weeks. About what date would this be?
Oh, I went in June.
Did you move straight to the battalion?
Yes, straight down to the battalion from Brandsbeth. And, well, it would be getting near to September when I went down there, because that was when the Battle of Britain was. Yes, it was be getting somewhere near September when we joined the battalion.
And how
battalion.
Many of you moved, and how did you move?
We moved by train. There was a good crowd of us that went down to the battalion. I can't say exactly how many, but we went by train. And naturally, being wartime, the train was late. And what happened on the train, I don't know. Probably we slept the best part of the way, because you're always tired. And anyway, if it was boring, that was the best thing for a dude to catch up the sleep, because you never knew when you were going to get the next one. And when we landed in Dorset, that's where they were, the 9th Battalion it was, and they had just come back from Dunkirk. It was early morning, and I remember the shepherd's pie that was ready for us when we got there to the battalion, and it was just lukewarm. We, you know, they'd done the best for to keep it warm until we got there, and it was just lukewarm. But the number of people, I just can't remember, but there was a good crowd of us. Probably nearly a platoon, enough to be a platoon.
Whereabouts in Devon did you meet up with the battalion?
That was at a place near Abbotsbury. It was a farm, and it was a little place called Lytton Cheney. And it was just away from the coast, not very far from the coast. And that's where we landed. And we were what they called in the field. So that meant we were under canvas. And that was our first night under canvas, because we'd been sleeping, as I'd said before, in barracks, church halls and things like that. So this time we were under a big bell tent. So we were put there for the first night and given our chance for to find ourselves out. And then after that, we had to stand to every morning because they were expecting the invasion, and there was positions dug right on the Abbotsbury beach. I think it was Pebble Beach they called it. And I know on the left-hand side of us was the Portland Bill, which was outstanding to us. And so I would think it would be about 4 o'clock every morning, 4 or 5, or maybe 4, I would think. And we used to trudge down to these positions on the just behind the beach. The beach was in front of us, and we were behind. And get into our positions, and we used to have to stand there and wait for first light, waiting for the mist and everything to come up off the sea. And when everything was clear, the voice behind you should be shouted, stand down, one of the officers, I expect. And then we used to be back again to the bell tents and doing our usual duties. But we did that for a while. Stood too. But while we were there, one particular morning, they'd sent the planes over. And we really enjoyed ourselves, because when first light came, we were able to watch the sky and over Portland Bill. It was fantastic. There's a number of Spitfires, just like little wee birds in the sky, but they were up there, and they were knocking the devil out of the big German Dorniers as they come across. And of course we enjoyed ourselves, because when they were coming down, when they were hitting them and they were coming down into the water in front of us, there was cheers all around. So So we didn't have to stop any Germans coming in, but at least we saw what how the RAF had stopped the Germans from coming, and they gave them a raise sort now. That was right over Portland Beale.
The positions were in slip trenches, were
yes,
they?
Yes, yeah.
So when you got back to your bell tent, you had duties to perform?
Yes, well, whatever come up during the day. But first of all, they used to let us call it a little naffy place on the way back, and it was a cute little place. It was seemed to be dug into the side of a wall somewhere or another. You know, I don't know, it must have been an outbuilding or something. But we were allowed to call in there and have a cup of tea, and then go back and start whatever we had to do. You could find that the mortar platoon would be out in one place and having the drill by the mortar sergeant, and different other things happening like that. And there was one time they come around and they said, anyone had any experience in, we were all fell in, and anyone had any experience in looking after stocks and figures, things like that. And I'd met the captain of the company for the first time, which was Captain Scott. He'd come out and he'd given us a talk, and he said we'd all been well trained, and we didn't have to allow ourselves to fall into the habits of the chaps that were already in the battalion. And instead of doing that, we had to try and bring them up to our type of training. But to us, it was good because we had to, we had not so much discipline, and it was a bit, life was easier for us. However, they asked if they wanted, anyone had any experience in that. Now, I thought about when I was at New Brunswick, the old thing, the corporal or the sergeant come in and he said, anyone know anything about music? And there were four fellas put their hands up, and they said, well, there's a piano to be moved from this place to the other. Well, that's the old chestnut, and it really happened to us. And I said, now, is this one of these things, or do they want some real information? However, I was remembering, you know, don't volunteer for anything. Anyway, I put my hand up. And the colour sergeant, the first time I'd seen him, he come across and he asked what I'd been used to, what I'd done. And that was when he said, well, I've got a job for you. It's going to be company storeman. So from the rest of the time you spend in the battalion, before you're going to be the company storeman.
Before we go on to that episode in your experience, what company were you in when you went to
Dowsett? Our company. That was the... there was A, B and C company, and our company was the company that Captain Scott was in charge of.
How were you received?
Well, by the chaps themselves. Oh, it was marvellous. Even for the company commander, when he spoke to her, you know, and he called by name, you're all called by your second name in the army, of course, and even when he said Rogers, it was different altogether to the Rogers that I used to have when I was training up at the New Brunswick, and the tone and everything about it. As a matter of fact, you got a feeling that you were coming into something like a family, you know, that the chaps were great. They friendly, but some of them weren't the best of soldiers in our light, because they were doing things that we thought they didn't know what to be doing.
Did you get the feeling that they were still recovering from Dunkirk?
Well, they never... I think they were a little bit depressed, but they never talked about it a great lot. Just on odd experiences, they'd been learning a bit of French, you know, and they would come out with a little bit of French that had been taught there. But I don't think it had affected them much, because they were carefree. I could put it that way. They were still carefree, and they were a happy set of fellas. But But just the only thing I noticed about them was, naturally, was coming from the training centre down to the battalion that they were a bit lax. But to me, it suited me because I was glad to get away from a bit of discipline.
So this was the beginning. You were getting the feeling of pride for the regiment, for your battalion.
Oh yes. So once you joined in there, and you joined men that come from all these little towns and villages. You can find them on the A69 now when you're going off travelling up north, Winlaton and Dunstan, Winlaton and all these men. They all come from there, and there were grand fellas, they were homely. And I don't think then I would begin to feel any pride of the battalion, because it was just a matter of you were ashamed if you joined a family, and I felt happy. Felt happy to be with them at that time.
Was there any attempt made to teach you the history of the regiment?
Well, we did that at the Brandsworth, it was. We used to always get the difference going from the 69th and the battle at the 14th, and why we used to have to wear our hat on straight and all these type of things. Yes, it was. We got a good grounding of the work that they'd done in the past, the battalions and the regiment had done in the past.
How were you received in the area by the civilian population?
At Dorset? Well, we never saw much of them because, as I said, we were in the field and we were living on a farm, and we never saw. We weren't there a great long time, but we couldn't say anything about it. The civilian people in Dorset, in particular, the next place, yes, but not Dorset. We were out in the field, and when it rained, we had to get the dug boards down, and it was a bit wild. And we were hungry at night time because we got our last meal at sometime about 5 o'clock, and we were glad of the falls off the apple trees. There was an orchard nearby, and the apples used to fall off there. So that used to be my supper, as a matter of fact, at night time for a while, the apples. But we never met up with many people at all. We did get different visits to places like Bridport and Dorchester. But as Dorset itself, as a town, we didn't get much chance to mix with them.
But we did. What was the food like?
Well, I can't remember much, but it must have been all right, because I never had any grumbles about army food. I think I can safely say, only in times of emergency, that the food in the army was always substantial. And matter of fact, I used to enjoy it. It was like breakfast time.
Yes, there was nothing better than early morning getting your 2 slices of bread dipped in the bacon dip, and a slice of bacon and your pot of tea in the lovely early morning fresh air. And I can always say that the food was substantial and good. I enjoyed it.
What was any training going on in these early days? After you'd done your stand two, and
well, as far as I can remember, for me there wasn't a great lot of training to be done, because I would be working with the quartermaster, with the colour sergeant. Then you see.
Yes, well, I wanted to ascertain that before we started to talk about your duties and responsibilities in light of becoming a storeman.
Yeah.
So you volunteered and became a storeman. What did that entail exactly?
Well, that entailed keeping the records of the company, names and addresses, rifle numbers, making sure that they got the requirements that they wanted when the kit, if they lost the kit and had to be made up,
a colour sergeant used to go out and collect it, and I used to have to issue it out to them. And that's about all that I can remember about the early days at Dorset.
And was this in company offices?
It was company headquarters, that which was made up of the company commander, the colour sergeant, the East Storeman, which was myself, company clerk, company runner, different works.
Where was the company headquarters?
At Dorset, I can't remember where the company headquarters were at Dorset.
Do you recall whether it was a tent or a building?
Well, I just couldn't think of it, you see, because I wasn't into my full duties as a storeman by then. It was more or less getting down to this. The work we were doing was standing to at the beaches on a morning, and doing a bit of training and etc. in the afternoon. So there wasn't a great lot that I can remember about that.
Is there any other outstanding recollections of your time at Dorset?
No, just the Battle of Britain. That was we didn't stay there very long, I don't think. So there wasn't any other things that I can think about.
So when was your next move?
We moved then from Dorset to a place called Sherborne, still in Dorset, and it was in a wood where we were placed, and we had to do some kind of a manoeuvre or scheme there. I can remember that. And there was one particular thing I did remember about it. The stay at Sherborne was less than what it was at Dorset. We weren't there very long. But one thing I do remember about it, the two old soldiers that we had in the battalion, to get out of going on the manoeuvres, they said they had lice, and they reported to the MO, and they told the MO they had lice. So naturally the MO wouldn't let them go on the manoeuvres. But Sergeant Ridger, a chap called Barrett from the Felling, he came to me, he said, "I want you to come out with me tonight." He said, "I've got a job I want to do." And he said, "We'll have a drink after." And I said, "Sergeant Major," I said, "private, sir, never drink with the Sergeant Majors." I said, "What's the job you've got? I've got to do for you?" He said, "Well, there's two fellas that are in a tent down there," and he said, "They've reported sick." Well, not really exactly sick, but they reported to the MO that they've got lice. And he said, "I know for a damn fact they haven't got lice." And he said, "They're going on that scheme tomorrow. Who'll go by Crook?" And he said, "I'm going down there to sort them out." And he said, "I want you to be a witness of what happens." He did. He went down, walked into the tent, and he said, "If you two lads have got lice," he said, "fair enough." He said, "I know you say you've got them." He said, "I know damn nicely that you haven't got them." And he said, "I'm going to take you outside." And he said, "You've got that choice, to come outside with me or be on the manoeuvres in the morning." "We'll be on the manoeuvre, Sergeant Major." And they were. Nothing happened. He just frightened the life out of them. And of course, he could use himself as Sergeant Major. He wasn't very big, this Sergeant Major Barrett, but he had been a boxer in his early days, so he could have done something about it if they'd been awkward. But them two lads were—I'll not mention the names—but they were on the manoeuvres the next year. And the only other thing I can remember about Sherborne is the first time I'd ever seen it was a hunt. I was sent a message early morning And I was riding through the countryside on my bicycle, going from one place to another, and they were all lined up for the hunt, all in the red uniforms, and the dogs were barking and everything. It was a lovely sight for me, that. And I just said to myself, well, what a funny war. We're doing this and they're doing that, but I expect it all worked out.
Were you fully into your storeman's duties at this
time? No, stage? not then. No, I didn't get fully into them until I got to. We didn't stay long there. I think we had this scheme, and then we moved on to Tiverton in Devon, which was right into the centre of a town. And of course, we were getting away from the tents, and we were all in houses. Matter of fact, when I first went into Tiverton in Devon, I was in the main street over above Jackson's the Tailors. So we were right in the centre of the town, and that's when we start to meet people and get mixed with them. And of course, we had a good headquarter company there at Tiverton, what we call a real one, because it was out in big house and ground, which we had to do our guards and whatnot. And I didn't do many guards because I was a bit of a lad for the bull, and I used to get the stick. So that meant that you didn't do your guard duty, and it was for the best turnout, by the way. And you didn't do your guard duty, but you did the messages during the day for the officers, wherever they wanted you to go.
Well, this was a walking stick of some kind.
Well, you didn't always get a stick, but it was named as the stick. You got the stick because you got a little bit of something. And it was just to say that you've been the best turned out soldier on the guard. So you got that. And that meant you missed from the guard, and you got the easy job, which is you slept all night, and then you just did the runabout during the day. So.
Was discipline changing at this time?
Well, we found it, going down from Bransworth, we found things nice and easy. Yeah, discipline was still there, but not in the form that we'd had at the training depot. And
had you any experiences of the kind of misdemeanors that people did to be disciplined, that caused them to be disciplined?
At this particular time in Devon, no, I don't think of any. Anything that they would get out of hand with.